Well, how you do, sir?
Good to see you.
Long time.
Hope you didn't give up on me.
You did.
Been in town a while. And
have you had supper?
Yeah. I thought maybe some friends of mine had to bring some camera equipment out for them.
Oh.
And their parents. And, you know, just ended up eating dinner with them.
Yeah. Are you driving?
Yeah, my parents are on vacation, so I got a hold of a car. I have two cars sitting at the house now. So I got a hold of one. That way I have more time to travel. Stay up here for a while. Not a long while, but I'll be here for a day or two anyway.
Oh. So you just toddled up here. That's good.
Yeah.
I suppose I thought you'd be on a bus or something, or a plane or something.
No, that's such a hard way to travel, you see.
Yeah.
That hours are so odd that it's almost impossible to fly and stay any length of time.
Yeah.
And a bus takes every bit of time you got to travel.
Yeah, that's right. And then you have to, you know, somebody else has to make schedules to to meet you and everything.
But this way it works out a lot better.
Well, we had just gone up. Alan was over there in the trailer.
Yeah, I met him last night.
I should have left you a note telling you that if you wanted to spend the night, you could. There's places to sleep out here, you know.
Yeah. Well, I had promised a friend of mine who's been asking me to come up the whole year for a week.
Yeah.
So I said, well, Bill, see, we'd room together. It's an old friend. I said, I can finally get away this weekend. He says, well, I have to go out of town Monday morning.
Uh-huh.
So I came up. We were going to just spend some time today, and it just rained all day.
In town?
Oh, yeah. I have never seen like a flood.
Oh, really?
Just torrents of rain. Hours and hours.
Somebody here?
Yeah, I think so.
Guy,
how you doing?
You had a shower.
I'm surprised you haven't had more out here.
Well,
man, it has rained all day. We've had a couple hours in the afternoon where it slacked off. But it's raining up there now.
Just a cloudburst. Mm-hmm.
Well, this has been cloudburst all day long.
Uh-huh.
These floods. I heard it's been right dry around here.
Mm.
It's not dry in town now, I guess.
Well, you didn't come up here to tell us about the weather, I see.
No.
That means, it looks bassy as it can be. It's like you hadn't been overworking.
I'm putting in my share. I was real glad to get out. I had 63 hours in last week.
63?
Yeah, that's... If I'm under 45, it's unusual. We work, and when we work, we get 13, 14 hours of stress. So it takes it out of you. I was glad to get away for a little while. Last week...
Now, you got
your
telephone voice over there. I can't hear you. That's
that old silly voice.
Is that what you use around there all the time? Huh?
I hope not. I hope not.
Now, you've got the grocery business pretty well in your system, is that it?
I think I'm full up to my ears with that. Oh, boy, we've been going and going and going. You know, you have a season, and it hits around Miami. It hits in the winter months, December, January, February, because that's all tourist trade coming in.
Yeah.
And you can just about double your business.
Is that right?
All those trucks will go from 25 and 30,000 pounds up to 50,000 pounds. And I've been waiting for it to slack off because you just worked yourself to death. And I thought after February it'd start going down. It has a little bit, but it hasn't let up like I thought it would. And, this last week was about the hardest week I've worked there. We put in 63 hours last week. That's working anywhere from 10 to 13 hours a day.
Well, that's, now that's overtime.
Oh, yeah. You get paid for it. But after a while, you just don't want it. And you're so tired. You know, I much, much more enjoy a day off. But, you know,
yeah.
So the work's got to get done. And it's a frustrating business because, you know, you set that store up, you know, stock everything out, you get everything cleaned and straightened, you come in the next day, and after everybody's shopping, you'd swear that nobody'd ever touch that store. It's just a disaster. The shelves are empty, the back room's a mess. Out of groceries. And it's round, round, round you go.
Yeah.
It's a cycle. About twice a week you do that. Tires you out.
Just twice a week?
Yeah, that's about when the trucks come in. So we get a truck on Wednesday.
Oh,
see?
Yes.
And then another one on Saturday. See?
You restock and reshelve everything twice a week.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
We were doing it three times a week. We'd do it Thursday, and we do it again Saturday, and then we do it again Monday.
Now, is that all in one store?
Mm-hmm.
Gee whiz. All your crew, it just keeps that one store going.
Yeah. That's the way it goes in all the stores. Yeah, it used to be a store would get by with one delivery a week. And now we're having a hard time getting by with just with two. I can see that it's going to go to three eventually. That's, we can get rid of up to 100,000 pounds of groceries a week, which is, well, that's 50,000 pounds is the whole semi-trailer stacked to the roof.
Yeah.
Just jammed.
Yeah.
And right now the trucks are running about 30,000, which is not too bad.
That's down a little bit.
Yeah. You don't break yourself up too much doing that, because you can figure the next day won't be too long. It'll run an easy 10 to 12 hours, but I remember one day we went 18 hours. I don't know.
Yeah.
You just can't work after 10. You're just no good.
I wouldn't be. Now, your crew, they don't have a slowdown like they do at the university, do they?
What you mean now by slowdown? You mean...
Well, you got two men doing one man's work.
No, you know, the thing is, you know, you got, you know, some people like work 8 hours, see, and then your job's done. Well, we work till we get done. That's the way it is. You don't work 8 hours a day. You work 40 hours a week, but you don't know. You might get 20 hours at once, and you might get two or three the next time. So,
oh, really?
So the faster you work, the sooner you get out of there. And our manager totally says, look, if you can get this work done in 35 hours, then I'll pay you for 40. But he knows there's no way you'll get it done in less than 40. So when you go in, there's no use to slow down, because you just stay there until you're done. So everybody works. And you've got, now we've got three full-time stockmen, see, and they've each got a section in that store. Now I have one aisle, I have aisle 7, and that whole aisle is my responsibility, and I have to, you know, make sure it's all stocked out. And then the other men each have an aisle. So when we go in, the first thing we do is stock our own aisles. That's about 4 to 6 hours of work. Then after we're done there, we start on the other aisles, see. And whoever gets done first, they go to another section, try and get it done. And so everybody pitches in and helps each other, and it's just no use to be lazy or slow, because nobody leaves until everybody's done. So that works out real good.
Well, I find that slowdown demoralizing.
Yeah.
But I find that they all do it. They take coffee breaks all the time, and they walk along, and you see, just shuffle along, take a half step or a whole step, get them there.
Well, now that'll happen. After you get tired, they'll start, you know, you're getting close to the end.
I'm not talking about getting tired. These fellas are not tired.
Well, that's the only time it happens, when they're tired.
Yeah.
But now, a funny thing did happen. You remember I told you about Dean. Dean doesn't work there anymore. But we used to have a thing where we would unload a truck on Wednesday. We'd come in at 3:30 in the afternoon, unload the truck, and get through anywhere between 8 and 10 o'clock. It depends on how big the truck is. And then we'd take an hour and eat and rest.
Oh, well, he's eating now.
Oh, yeah.
And you just let him starve.
And then we'd stock out all night. We'd stock from midnight to say 6 or 7 in the morning. And it's a good time to stock because there's nobody in the store. You don't have to worry about making a mess. You don't have to worry about wearing a tie or anything. You just go. Well, the thing with Dean was it was like a social club. It was the darndest thing I've ever seen happen. It was like, this is my crew and I have control of them. And there's nobody in the store but Dean to take care of things, see? It was late, nobody there. He was like manager. Well, we'd come back after eating, and we'd work about an hour and a half, and he'd say, well, let's take a break. Well, now, the ruling is you take a break every 4 hours, and you take 15 minutes. So, the first time we stocked out all night, we did that. We took a break after about an hour's work. And of course, you sit there and talk and eat, and before you know it, 30, 40 minutes have gone by, and you go back to work. Well, you're slow by then. So when you come back off, you know, after the truck, and you've had your dinner break, and I'm ready to work. And if you just turn me loose and leave me alone, I can get a lot of work done. But this working an hour and taking a break, well, it just breaks it all up. And then you know you're going to take another break about 3 or 4 in the morning, and that's going to stretch out. So that would eat up all kinds of time. And instead of getting through at 6 or 7 in the morning, you might not get through till 9. Well, one night, the truck was about 48,000 pounds, which is a big truck. And they're hard to unload, because when they stack those semis, see, if they stack them all the way to the ceiling, that's about 8 to 10 feet. That means somebody's got to crawl up and pick that box up. And it just slows you down. Just
sort of muscled up, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is what I said.
Yeah, it gets to be a lot of work picking up, you know, those crates when they're way up like that. See, if the 30,000 pounds trucks are low, they're about this high, and you can just zip right through them. You don't have to pick them up so much, but these big trucks. Well, we had 6 men unloading that truck. When we started out, we were moving. We were moving good. By the time we got to the end of the truck, everybody was tired and getting a little punchy and silly. And it was midnight before we finished the truck. Well, that's 7 hours unloading a truck, and that'll make anybody mad because you just don't take that long to do it. You should be able to do it in 5 or 6. But see, toward the end, Dean was in control back there, and he was the one that was supposed to make us go. And when he let up, everybody else let up, and we just slowed down. And, you know, you start kidding around and knocking boxes off the roller, and, you know, you have a way you cut those cases open so that if you cut it right, everything will be exposed, and you can just price it right away. Well, somebody would get funny, and he cut it so that it would expose the smallest amount of merchandise possible, and you have to take everything out of the box to get to it to price it, which just takes all kinds of time. And that kind of made me mad. I just wouldn't even price it. I said, you cut it, you price it. So we got done, and then we went to eat, and came back, and it was 1 o'clock.
Well, now that pricing is not part of unloading.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. See, the old system was where you unloaded the truck, and you just counted the number of pieces that came off the truck. And then you had a bill, and you compared the number, and you figured out how many short you were. And then later you were supposed to figure out just what was missing and then tell the warehouse and they'd give you credit on it. Well, now they have a little sticker on every single box that tells the date the box came in, what it is, how much it costs, and then it has little code numbers so you can match it with the bill, the vouchers. And you got to check each one off as they come in. You know, somebody just calls that code number off and you just check it off. So when it comes off the truck, somebody cuts it open and then sends it down the roller and somebody checks it off. And somebody else prices it. It's all done right there. And then you stack it on the carts in the back room. So the next day when you come in stock, you just have to take it out and put it on the shelf. And it's none of this with the stampers and everything. It's a lot faster. I like the system.
Good.
But when they start cutting the cases open wrong, you know, it makes a mess. It's like you take a case. I have 24 cans in it. You have two rows, 12 and then 12 on top.
Yeah.
So you cut it around the middle and break it in half. And that way all 12 cans are right there. See, and there's no trouble. Well, if you cut top open, that means you got to pull 12 cans out and stamp them and put them all back in. See?
Oh.
So there's an art to cutting. You know, we have guys that can really cut, and then we have guys that just mess it up. And they'll get a box and they'll goof up the cut and you just look what you've done to us and you gotta stop.
Well, you know. They don't cut watermelons, they cut boxes.
Yeah.
And we have one guy.
It's nice to still have cutters, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
There's a lot more boxes than one of us.
Yeah. There's an art to it, I'll tell you, because, like, you get cereal in. That's, if you cut too deep through that case, and you cut the cases inside. But if you get exactly in the middle, you know where there'll be six boxes here and six on top. If you just cut where they come together, you don't have to worry about cutting the case. Somebody's never cut a case. And we have one guy we call the butcher, and that's Ed. And he'll get out in the truck, and the cereal will come down, and I'll look at the case, and he's got every box of the whole case cut open. You know, if that ruins the whole case, you have to throw it out. I go, "Well, Ed, you got another here." And we all laugh at him. Ed the butcher. We have to throw that out. But then we just mark it up short for the warehouse, and they give credit on it. See? So we don't get charged for it.
Cutters, man.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Let's see. Joe almost always cuts. He's the fastest cutter we got. He's like a workhorse. He'll get up and cut the whole truck. He'll cut until he drops. He'll go home and get his brother's back brace and put it on so he can keep going, because you have to bend over and pick these boxes up. And I think the average weight is 28 pounds a box.
Oh, yeah.
And there's nothing you can do. You have to bend over.
And your back just don't last forever.
No. He gets up and plays hero, and then he comes out and complains how his back's hurting, and he's waiting for somebody to give him a compliment on what a good job. And I just want to say, well, you're damn stupid to get up there and cut that whole truck. You know, nobody should do that. We should split it up into thirds or something.
Yeah.
But nobody can cut as fast as he can do it.
Yeah.
And then Ed can price faster than anybody I've ever seen. Well, he can do two or three boxes before I get one.
What,
three? Yeah.
You mean stamp? Price?
Well, you know, they used to have these. I got one in my car, stamper.
It's
just part of my life now. I carry it with me.
Yeah.
There's a whole lore behind stampers, I'll tell you.
Oh, really?
The art is trying to hold on to it. I think I've got the record of keeping mine for about 2 months now. Usually someone borrows it and you never see it again. But I chase them around stores and give me that stamper back, or you never borrow it again. And cutters, we had 12 cases of cutters. There's 12 in a box. And I think inside of a month, every one of them had just disappeared. And I guarantee you, if you go to some stockman's home, you'll find at least 5 stampers and half a dozen cutters. Because they take them home and they leave them. And I don't know why, because there's no value. Stampers, no good. But they just keep them at home.
This is a whole world, guys. Scotland's world.
Fascinating. But they have now, they have a set of markers. They call them pogo markers. They look like a big fat pencil. And they have, it's like a rubber stamp. That's what it is. It has a number, you know. And we have numbers 1 through 100. And then we have 2 for 39 or 2 for 49. A big set. And you stamp it on an ink pad, and you just stamp the boxes, see? You just pick the right number. And you can move on those things. See, with a stamper, you have to push it down.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So,
And on that, you don't have to push it.
Yeah, and you don't have to change the numbers. See, with these pogo markers, they're all set. It's a rubber stamp. See, and you just pick the right one.
And then just...
Yeah. 50. They have the numbers written on top. And you just go down until you find, like, say, 60 cents. You pull it out and stamp it. And just stick it back in the proper slot. See, everything's all in order. Of course, every once in a while you pick that thing up. It's a big plastic tray. There must be about 150 of these rubber stamps in there. And I've dropped that before. And when you drop it, because they all come out. And the tray will come apart. And you got ink all over the floor. And then you've got to sit and put them all back in order. And every time I've dropped it, it's just before we start the truck. That means everybody's got to wait till you put them all back in order. And you hurry, and then you get them in the wrong holes because some are fatter than the others. We'll have like two guys pricing. You know, you got the roller coming down, and you got a guy on each side. We've each got a set of markers. And I always try and get in front of Ed, because if I get behind him, he'll price everything. He's just so fast that I say, "Ed, would you just leave something for me to price, because I don't have anything to do tonight." If the manager comes back, he's going to get mad at me for standing here. "Oh, yeah, okay, Rick." He just, boom, right through it. He'll run down and he'll read the labels on 5 or 6 boxes, memorize all the prices, run, grab all those markers, and then get them all priced. And then we have two guys that are stacked. You know, they take it off the roller and put it in the appropriate section in the back room. And they're fast at that. Now, I don't know what I'm fast at. Checking off is about my best thing. I mean, they just call numbers and check them off. And, you know, it's funny, some people can't do that.
Oh, really?
You know, you have a letter and you have a three-digit number. You'll say, like, L256.
Oh, yes. Yes.
And he'll say, what'd you say, L2 what? 256. And so usually I can take, you can call two, three numbers in a row and I can get them all. Although after you've done a couple hundred, it all just gets to be a big blur. And you, because you figure you have anywhere from 1,500 to 2,000 pieces on a truck. That gets to be a lot of numbers. You've got a whole alphabet plus all those numbers.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a damnedest thing.
And those trucks come in.
So you had to get rid of Dean.
Yeah. Well, this had been brewing for a long time. And the manager had meant to ask me about it. And he didn't, you know, because we've been having a lot of trouble with people not getting along all of a sudden, or our dean would yell at him a lot, and it wouldn't be necessary. So this one night, we came into work. This had been a Wednesday. And we unloaded the truck, and it was about close to 12 when we finished. And Henry, the manager, came in. He says, he was mad, but he's a very diplomatic man. He won't come out and bawl you out. He'll just kind of look at you as if to say, well, you're on the line now. And you understand. You know, he doesn't insult people. He doesn't embarrass people. You know, if he's mad at you, he'll let you know, but he won't tell everybody. He won't do that to you. And I could tell he was kind of mad. And he wanted us to work all night because we can work so much faster at night because nobody's in the store, so nobody gets in your way. And he said, well, you all can work all night or you can come in at 4 in the morning and start stocking. Well, there's no point in going to bed at 12, getting up at 3, and coming to work at 4. You know, that's almost worse than not getting any sleep at all. So I didn't mind stocking all night. And the other people, they were a little kicky about it, but they just said they would. And Dean just didn't want to do it. Dean got mad. And the funny thing about it is, the whole idea of stocking a night was his to begin with. It was his suggestion. And all of a sudden, he didn't want to do it. So it got to be of a thing that he didn't want to do what the manager told him. He wanted to do what he thought. Well, you don't do that. And he was just a third man. He wasn't even a third man. He was just training for one. And so he started making all kinds of sharp remarks about his wife had to stay home. And then when he went home for dinner, he saw somebody riding a bicycle in the neighborhood. So he called the police about that because he was upset about that. And he'd come to work and he had have to go back home and clear it with the police. And it just got to be obnoxious. He got so mad. And when Dean got mad, everybody had to get mad. I remember one time we were stocking paper, and he was talking to somebody, and he said, you know, when I'm happy, everybody's happy. Mm-hmm. And I just thought to myself, boy, you just don't know. You're just not in touch with anybody. And that was when I first kind of realized what it was that Dean was doing. Everybody had to feel the way he did, and he couldn't have it any other way. So when he found out we had to stock all night, we still hadn't finished the truck. He got up in the truck, and I was checking off, and he started calling off the numbers. Well, he just started ripping those numbers off faster than I could check, and I just said, well, I'm sorry, you're going to have to slow down. He goes, well, open up your ears. And I didn't say anything, because I just said, well, Dean's pouting. He's in a bad mood now. So we got done about 12, and we ate, and we came back at 1 o'clock, and we started stocking. And sure enough, in just about an hour, he said, okay, let's take a break. And I said, well, you go ahead and take a break, but I'm not going to tonight. Because we have a lot to do, and I want to get out of here by 7. Because I'm tired. And he got mad at me, kind of. But he got, not so much a thing as really wanting to yell at me, but of a thing where I just wasn't respecting his authority, and he knew he couldn't do anything about it. Because he knew he wasn't supposed to be taking a break then. So everybody else went over and sat down and took a break. He said, well, I got some milk here. And I said, no, I don't want it. I want to work. He just gave me a real dirty look. So I went ahead and worked. And then about 4 o'clock in the morning, they went to take another break. And he comes up and says, well, can I have permission for us to have a break now? And I just kind of chuckled. I said, yeah, it's been 4 hours. We'll take a break now. And I was surprised he'd said that. He was getting to act real sheepish-like. So we went ahead and worked, and of course everybody was slowing down because Dean was just complaining all night. He kept complaining his wife was lonely. He kept complaining we're tired, we can't get the work done. And we'd done this before. So around 9 o'clock, we still had 2 or 3 sections left to do. And the back room was just a mess. Now our store manager is a real stickler for having a nice, neat, straight back room. He just doesn't like it messy. And you know, as you work out a case, you've got that cardboard box. And we break them down, and we have a baling machine. It crushes them all up, and then you wrap them up in a wire bale.
Oh.
See. Well, what they'd been doing that night, instead of baling it as they went, they just kept throwing it in the back room. So he had 2,000 empty cardboard boxes, all broken and torn up in a pile back there. And that takes a while to bale all that up. So he came in about 9, and he looked at the store, and it was a mess because we hadn't cleaned up on the floors. He went in the back room, and all the carts were out of place, and the merchandise was all over the floor, and it was all that cardboard. And he was so mad he could hardly talk. He just started talking. You could hear his voice just trembling. And I didn't know if he was upset and was going to cry or what, and I just stood there because the storm was brewing. And he looked at Dean. He says, you know you spent 7 hours in that truck? He said, yeah. He says, now, do you call that getting it? And Dean said, well, if I can't do the work, you just get somebody else that can. He says, okay, hit the clock. And I was just, oh, because we were all tired and punchy. We'd been going, well, I'd been up for over 24 hours by that point. I was really tired. And then he turned around and looked at us, and he said, okay, I'm not mad at you all, but I want you to get the back room cleaned up, get the floor cleaned up outside, and get out of here as soon as you can. And I really admired him for that. You know, he didn't take it out on the rest of the employees. He was just mad at Dean. And he didn't fire Dean. He wasn't saying that. He just told him to punch out and go home. But Dean was not about to come back. And he didn't. He quit. And he had another job the next day. But I remember a couple days later, we were stocking in the store, and he came by and said, well, I got me a white man's job now. And I knew where he's working. I knew what he's doing. He was working in a warehouse. He wasn't in the office. He was on the floor of the warehouse just being stock clerk, which was not, well, actually, it's less than what he was doing because he didn't have any authority. And I said, well, you got yourself a desk job now? And he just kind of looked funny, and he said, well, no, right now I'm working in the warehouse. So I didn't say anything. I let it go. He just had to prove, you know, that he was in charge, but he wasn't, and he got kicked out for it. After that, that store just smoothed out.
I thought maybe that night you worked him over, that might help him a little bit, but it's just too much for him.
You know, I tried talking to him. Like, we'd go have a drink somewhere. You know, after work, we'd stop and have a beer or something. I would talk to him. I'd tell him things that he was doing that really irritate people. And it was funny because I said, you know, you're always saying this comment, so's your mother, you know. Somebody said, man, this is the sloppiest looking job I've ever seen. He'd go, ah, so's your mother. And I said, you know, some people might be pretty sensitive to that, and it's not a really nice thing to say, and you ought to stop. And he says, yeah, I know. I've wondered about that. I said, if he knew, it won't do me any good to tell him. And you know, he didn't stop. I thought he did. He quit for a day or two, and then it started right back up.
But the others were pretty considerate, and they didn't have those problems.
No. It's like Dean cussed a lot, and everybody cussed a lot when Dean was there. Dean's not there, and nobody cusses much now.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, really?
Yeah. I was surprised. And everybody was always getting mad at each other.
Yeah.
Dean's not there, and nobody gets mad at each other anymore.
Yeah.
Just one person.
I have never seen anything get so upset in my life. Just
how
one
long
person.
How long has that been since Dean punched him?
Let me see. About a month now. May, April.
So things have been quieter since.
Yeah, about a month or two.
But you don't see Dean.
He still comes in the store. He'll come in and cash his paycheck. And he'll usually have a girl with him. He's married. And we all know he's married. He'll have another girl with him. And he's just flaunting it. Just come in and he'll, hi, Rick, you know, have her on his arm. And I'll just look at him and go, hi, Dean. And it's a sad case. I remember after he quit, I was talking to Henry, and Henry told me, he says, you know, if he hadn't given me the lip that day, he says, I don't know what I would have done. But he started giving me some lip, just like I figured he would. Turned out Henry was planning on him, you know, talking back to him, which would give him reason enough to get mad and tell him to punch out. He says, if he hadn't done that, I don't know what I would have said. He said, but if things ever get like this again, you got to tell me. He says, I was going to talk to you and ask you. Because a lot of the stockmen had complained about Dean, that he was yelling at him too much, it was unfair. And he says, you just should have told me before they got this bad. And I said, well, it was hard for me to judge because I had never worked under any other third man, so I had nothing to compare by. And I was kind of under Dean's power. It was a funny thing. It was like, Dean, I think, was all bark and no bite. He could really intimidate people, you know, just embarrass you, and you couldn't embarrass Dean.
Uh-huh.
He could just, if you started to beat him in an argument, he'd just start raising his voice until he'd shout you down.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I remember one night, Ed, and we'd finished unloading the truck, and he told Egg to go clean up damaged merchandise. It's like you get a case of, say, ketchup where the bottle's broken, and it'll splash over the other bottle. So you gotta, we put that down by the sink. When we finished the truck, we go and clean up the good part, you know, the good items in the box. So after he finished it, he said, okay, go put it on the shelf. Well, that didn't make any sense to me. I said, well, why not just put it in the section? It'll work out tomorrow. He said, well, Henry said to. And Ed didn't want to do it. He said, well, I already got them boxed. We can just leave them here and put them in the carts. We'll stock them out tomorrow. And Dean just started yelling at him. Just yelling loud. Everybody was just standing there watching these two. Well, Ed's the kind of guy that won't fight back a lot. And he knew he could, if he shouted enough, Ed would do it. And he finally did. But I remember Joe turned around and looked at me and said, that's just not the way you treat people. This has got to stop. And he walked off. And then everybody else was out of the stock room, and Dean turned to me and said, well, you think I was unfair? And I was really confused over it because I just couldn't quite understand what had happened. Because if Henry had said, clean the merchandise up and put it on the shelf, well, that's what you got to do. And I said, yeah, well, the thing is, that's a dirty job. I don't see why you have to give it to Ed every week. He said, well, I don't. I gave it to somebody last week. And that was true. He usually rotated it and gave it to somebody else every week. And I said, but you just don't ever have to yell at people like that. He didn't say anything back. But if you'd stand up to him, he'd back down. And the only trouble was, nobody would ever stand up to him. Even I was afraid to. And that night I refused to take a break was when I first realized that if you did stand up to him, he wouldn't be any trouble to you. But he would always be gnawing at you, and I was glad to see him quit.
I didn't realize that there was such a chain of command.
Mm-hmm. It forms. Now, the thing is, this is, I was determined after Dean left that nobody else was going to take charge. Nobody has the authority. Everybody knows what to do. Everybody knows how to do all the jobs. And if you just let them go, it'll get done. You know, if somebody wants to cut the truck, that's fine, because somebody else will decide they want a price. Everybody will pick a job, and it'll get done, and it'll get done well. Well, after Dean left, Joe started to take over. This is Joe Birch. You know, I started to investigate his family. He's got quite a family. Fascinating. But, he would come in and say, okay, now I'm going to organize everything else tonight. Rick, I want you to cut. I want you to put the price card here. And then that way you can check off and price as things come by. And I'd say, Joe, I'm stacking tonight. You go talk to Fred. He's pricing. And he'd go, no. I said, no, I am stacking tonight. And you can talk to Fred about it. Well, Fred wouldn't take any lip off. And Fred would do what he wanted. And that squelched it, just like that. He'd be quiet. But the next time we unload a truck, he'd do the same thing. He'd say, okay, I'm cutting, Rick. I want you to price. I want you to put the price card right here. And I would just go, no. And finally, I said, Joe, you're always starting these systems. As long as I've been here, we've had a different system every time we unload the truck. They never work. They just get in our way. I'm not going to listen to you. We just leave everybody alone. They know the jobs. They'll do it. And after that, he hasn't said too much.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Isn't that something that you have to know?
Yeah.
And that happens in every store in the United States.
Probably does.
Isn't that something?
But you know, we don't get along too well now, Joe and I. We don't talk too much, and I feel uneasy around him. Because it's like he's very silly. It's like he'll always... We used to kid around, we'd say, like we have maybe 40 or 50 cases of bleach come in. It's on sale. After you got it all priced, he'd say, "Well, you think we'll get any bleach tonight?" And that's funny one time. But week after week after week, you know, it gets to be so old, and I go, "Yeah, well, you know, we might." And now I just don't say anything because I'm tired of that. And it gets to be where everything he says, I've heard that before, and I go, "Yeah, let that go." So we don't get along too well now. But I hated to be that blunt with him, but I knew that if you let him start giving commands, that once he started, he'd have the power.
Nobody appointed him.
No. He was kind of being like Dean, and I just would not let that happen. We never say too much about him cutting the truck because, like I say, he's the best one, and you may as well have the fastest guy up there. But he'll be cutting that truck, and he'll catch up. He'll back the roller up. He'll put more on than we can handle down, you know, at the price difference. And he'll hop down and run down. He'll start calling off numbers and pricing, just being super efficient. And when he does that, it makes me mad, so I just slow down, take my time. As if to say, you're not going to control me. And I feel bad about it in a way, because I realize I'm slowing down, and I'm slowing everybody else down. But I'll be damned if I'm going to let him, you know, take command. And I'll do what it takes to keep him away from it. And so far, it's worked. We get along real good.
I believe you see a little of his daddy in him.
Oh, gotta tell you about that.
Firming up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But Fred and I, Fred was the Cuban, and we hit it off great. I don't know why, I like Cubans for some reason, especially ones my age, because they've been in America a while, and they can usually speak the language and everything. But we got to be good buddies, but I never told Fred to do anything, and Fred never told me to do anything.
Yeah.
We both each respected each other's ability to work. And see, he had vegetable aisle. That's the hardest aisle. That's solid cans on both sides of those shelves, from one end to the other. And Fred always got done by the time the rest of the other things were done, which was good. And now Joe has that aisle, he can't keep up. And this is kind of a chuckle, you know. Because they're finally realizing how good a worker Fred was. Now, Fred just got transferred. He got promoted. So he's an assistant manager now. So he's not there at the store. I really miss him, too. So we used to go to lunch together, and he'd tell me about Cuban customs, and he'd try and teach me Spanish, you know, and he'd kid me about eating all this Cuban food. You know, we'd order these great big Cuban sandwiches. He says, "Now, you're American, and you can't eat it all. Only Cubans can eat the whole thing." So I'd force it down. I don't care how bad it hurt. I was determined I'd eat it, and I'd smile and say, "I ate it, Fred. Look at that." I remember one night we were unloading baby food. And you don't have to cut that open and price it, because they have men from Gerber and Beechnut baby food companies who go, their job is just to go from store to store every week and stock that section. Because, you know, there's so many small jars, you know, that, you know, they have their own salesmen that take care of it. We just order it. Matter of fact, they even tell us what to order. Well, when that baby food comes in, you know it's going to take two people to unload it. One to take it off the roller and one to, you know, somebody picks it up off the roller and tosses it to somebody, and they stack it, and you can just go right through it. Well, one night, they put all the baby food on the roller, and it was coming down, and Joe got off and says, "Okay, Fred, now we got about 150 cases of baby food coming on the roller. I want you and Rick to go down to the end of the roller and unload it. See, one of you throw it to the other, and you stack it." Well, you knew that. And it made Fred mad. We went ahead and did it, but from then on, even to the day that Fred left, it got to be a standard joke. Every time the baby food would come down the line, I'd say, "Okay, Fred, now we've got about 150 cases of baby food. I want you to go down there, and we are going to unload that baby food." And, or he'd say it to me every time. You know, Joe wouldn't usually hear it, but it was just a standard joke. because he made Fred mad. And Fred was the kind of guy, when he got mad, he knew it. And you knew it. He would just come up and he would just start cussing at you. And he'd tell you just why he was mad. He wouldn't hide it or anything. I think that's why I liked him so much. He was very honest about it.
Well, now, all these people was families?
Families. I don't follow you. You mean all of them have families?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. They're
all settled people.
Yeah, Fred just got married. But with Cuban family, even when you get married, it stays
together.
They're
young.
Yeah. I'm the oldest one.
Oh, really?
See, I'm almost 23. Joe is going on 19. Fred is 20. Ed is about 18. Pepe is 17.
Oh, God, baby. They're just children.
But look how they work.
Oh, yeah. Something.
My gosh. That make a man out of.
Did they go to school?
Oh, yeah. Some of them are in junior college, and they work and go to college. We like Pepe. Pepe is 17. He's a good-looking guy. And he and I get along really well. He's very, just a real friendly fellow, really warm and sincere. And every time I see him, we shake hands. Now, my best friends, I don't ever shake hands with them, like I was with Bill. Now, I haven't seen Bill in months, so when I saw him, I didn't shake hands. When I left, I didn't shake hands.
Don't say shake
hands. You know, I just say, hey, Bill. With Fred and Pepe, you shake hands every time you see them. And that's a Cuban custom, I think. They're very warm like that. They're always, you know, hugging you and touching you. When I went to his wedding, I just went up and hugged him. You know, I don't do that to my friends. But with Fred, that was the way it was. You hugged. Everybody was hugging each other. So, well, I'll just hug some people, too.
Rick.
Yeah. I couldn't speak a word in Spanish. I had no idea what they were saying, but I understood hugging them. Yeah. But, like, Pepe is 17. He just bought a brand new car, and I'm sure it must cost him over $4,000.
Good Lord.
He's working part-time to pay that car off, and he's going to college, and he's probably going to get married in a year or two. I couldn't think of doing that. I don't even own a car. They're so expensive and so much trouble to run. But they're all... Ed is working on his pilot's license. He's going to junior college.
Well, what do you do with all your money?
I bank it.
You mean you've got a little money?
Yeah.
Well, what do you spend?
Oh, I'd say 20 to 40 a week. I try and bank 100 a week if I can.
What do you spend it for?
Well, clothes. And records. I like music. And then, you know, you got gas for the car and something like that. Or you go out, take somebody out, you know.
How much does it cost to take somebody out?
Anywhere between $7 and $10 now.
Can you do it for that?
Yeah. If you go to a movie or something, that's gonna be $5 for tickets alone. You go out afterwards, that's another 3 or 4. If you go to something big like a concert or something, that's $10 just for tickets. That's the lowest, cheapest tickets. You can figure upwards of 20 for just tickets alone.
Yeah.
Things get expensive like that. But as long as I can make overtime, you know, I have little to spare. If I work a Sunday, I was going to work every other Sunday, but once I started working Sundays, I've worked almost every single Sunday. But that's time and a half, and that's all gravy. That way I can bank most of my check. And
you
just
bank $100 a month, a week, say.
What?
If I'm lucky. I'm close to that.
Close to that.
You bank that much?
Yeah. See, my biggest
pay. It don't cost you to live at home.
No, you see, my parents are really good about it. They don't charge me room or board. And I said, well, look, you know, I'm an adult, I'm grown up and all that. I'll offer to pay you room and board. I didn't encourage it, of course. And my mother said, well, that's kind of an insult. This is your home, and I don't ever want you to have to pay. Stay here. And the funny thing is, see, I offer to pay. My sister comes along, and my mother mentioned something about it. And she said, well, how dare you ask me to pay? This is my home. And that kind of makes my parents feel good. So my check is all my money. I don't have a car, but I have unlimited use of one of the cars. I have to have one to go to work. And I tell my mom, look, you know, this car is kind of yours. Why don't you take me to work? Well, it's too far to drive. She'll take my dad to work before she'll take me to work. So if she wants a car, she takes dad to work and then, you know, picks him up in the evening. So I have the car, and then I'm on his insurance policy, and he's yet to get a bill for any increase in insurance. So he says, well, if they won't charge me, I'm not going to pay them. Now, once I get my own, I'll have to go on my own policy. That'll be more expensive. But, well, you got to if you want to go from here and there. But,
gosh, if you could bank $100 a week, you... Yeah.
Go on public transportation.
He's going to buy a new car pretty soon, I think. And if he does, I'll get the one I drove up here. It's got a lot of miles on it, but it's in good, good shape. And he'll make sure everything is right before he'll let me have it.
Well, mileage don't hurt it if it's not wore out, you know.
No, it's not. It needs a little work, but it runs good. And I said, well, I'll pay you Blue Book on it, you know, whatever the going price is. And he says, well, I was going to give it to you. I says, well, all right. I'd like to pay you something. He says, okay, how about a dollar? So that means, you know, I was figuring to buy a car and insurance would cost me close to $1,000. This way, I'm hoping it'll be under $300. Because if I'm up here, insurance would be a lot cheaper.
Yeah.
Miami's the roughest place to get insured.
Yeah.
But we'll have to see about that. That's still waiting. If he buys a new car, see, that's what it depends on.
Well, I'm going to tell you, Rick, it's my bedtime, and my eyes give out, and I have 4 days anyhow. Now, what is today? Sunday?
Mm-hmm.
Sunday. Oh, Lord. Every day, 7 day week, just as long as my wits will wiggle. It's going like that, and
oh, you don't know what he did this week.
It's just since you were here, it is just so much more interesting than it was. It's just unbelievable. It's just unbelievable. You see, it's a matter of seeing, and it's so hard and so slow, you know.
Hmm.
And I, don't you know, I told you that. I always said, hell, anybody on a set won't be able to see or report anything like that. Why, God Almighty. Why, these freshmen. I'm getting control of it now, and where I can get the freshmen to report it.
Hmm.
And they see things I never see. Lord help us. Lord help us. I'm not seeing it more than I ever did, but I'm getting them to where they can, you see. And I don't want to, I've had enough, you know, I'll turn it over. But it's really, really nice. I mean, you know, right interest. Except it keeps me wore out all the time. The edge is off, you see. I can't sink anymore. My mind quit working. It won't work, you know. You got to be fairly fresh. I feel like you do it overtime.
Yeah. Well, he's hit somebody.
Well, it's
all weekend.
Now, say you're going to get too far along. You see, I talked, but I didn't tell him anything.
Uh-huh.
And you'll tell him things.
No.
Yes, you do. You're smart. She's smart people, you see. No, that's the truth. That's the truth. I have never had anything as satisfying in my life. I have no further ambitions. I don't want to write a book. I don't want to go to China. I don't want to do anything. Right here in the southeast corner of Lachlan County is big enough for me. But I can't quit work, you see. That's my whole... I don't have access. That's the only way I have access to people with that mentality.
Mm.
Isn't that shameful? It's the only place I have access to people with any mentality. So I can't quit. I just got to drag on up there. That's the truth. Now you want to learn all I know now before you get into the echelon. because let me tell you what I did. Old Roger Sims, did you know him?
Yeah, I knew Roger.
Well, he's a son of a bitch. He's a bastard.
Oh, God.
No, he's nice, isn't he?
Oh, yeah, he's got a radio voice.
Well, he was in my class.
Yeah, I remember him. I had him in another class, too. He's sharp.
Great big.
Yeah.
Yes, and he's so agreeable, and he understood. And he had somewhere, he got a prose style.
Mm-hmm.
He could handle the language. I mean, just straightforward, clear. Well, there's few that I ever found who could do it. Well, you see, he made Phi Beta Kappa. He applied for the Rhodes Scholarships and almost got it. And
Roger.
And they gave him the Barber Prize in communications and one thing another. And he's a straight A student. Now, let me tell you, Ray, he was over the house the other day, and he's not nearly as interesting as he was when I knew him as a sophomore. He has pleased too many people.
He can do that part.
Mm-hmm. With that 4-point average, you see, it's just not worth it. It's simply not worth it. And then he started telling me people, you had to watch out for grades. He said, that's all people look at, your grade. Well, I don't look at it. And I don't think other people do. He's not near as interesting as he was. And let me tell you, he's working that radio, and it makes no sense whatever. There's no way of looking at it. It's sensible.
Mm-hmm.
None. Not any. And he's done that 3 years. And now he's going into law, and he thinks that will lead him into media law.
Hmm.
Well, now, who wants to be in the media law? I mean, where will that get you?
I don't even know.
You get rich. Well, you see, in the shameful. I should have kept up with him. But he was...
Yeah, you should have.
Uh-huh.
Because he was willing, and
oh,
he wrote you.
Yes.
And he really...
Yeah.
They made contact.
Yeah. He's such a nice fellow. But you see, he don't realize what the law, what just the reading of the law does to the mind.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't tell anyone that. And, but that's now you got a if you had a little time could you say things interesting about your grocery? Ought to.
Yeah.
I don't think you can.
That's now just that business of reporting there.
I think that's the.
I didn't know anything about
it. The point of it is all is, you see, you have got to. You can't be condescending about it.
Mm-mm.
If you are, you might as well do something else.
Yeah.
That is, you've got to get a hold of it to where you can. The fellow that you listens to you, you're going to be condescending to him. Where he didn't have the great good fortune, you see, of doing that. There's no choice. Now, one of the freshmen had been going over at Berman's, and I never saw Berman like that before. Now, his statements aren't exactly interesting. He didn't try to make them interesting. But he was just fascinated. But see, if he reports on that, he's got to be far enough along where he can do that. Feel sorry for the person who's reading it. Huh? You see, I don't know. I haven't got to that point myself. But you've got to take a hold of all of them and make them live. And once they live, you don't have to apologize for them. See?
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. Sorry, you see, I'm not how you'd handle Dean. I never cared much for Dean. You see, in your reporting of him, I couldn't. Well, you didn't do too much on him. But you got to get a hold of it somehow. Take his point of view or something. I don't know what it is. You see. I can do it for Berman in the countryside.
Yeah.
Hell, I can take Frankie. And if he's not a little dried up pig turd, I never saw one. He's as cranky and as hard to get along with. Hard? You can't get along with him. But I can bring him to life. In the countryside, you see. But you take me out of the countryside, and I'm pretty open.
But I never thought the stock room of Winn-Dixie would come to life.
Well, you see, I'd be total lost. Perfect lost at that. But it comes to life more now than it did,
yeah,
doesn't it?
Yeah.
Well, I feel a different working there now. See, that's almost like a second home. I'm there so much, and
yeah,
like you say, that condescending. I don't feel college education so much anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
And they don't bother about it so much.
No, in fact, we joke about it a lot more openly. Before, I just hid it. I didn't want to say anything about it.
Yeah.
And now I can talk about it, and, you know. So it's still there. It always will be to some extent. Because the point of view is, well, if you've got a degree, why are you working here? And I don't know how to answer that. I just say, well, I'm working here.
Oh, you mean you don't know what to say to them?
Yeah.
Well, there's always an answer for everybody, isn't there?
I guess.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know.
I learned that when I was the head of the department. You'd arrange the courses, and you had one way of thinking for the freshmen, say, and another for the administration. And get used to that. That's right. But now, the thing of it, for a while, it didn't seem to me like you saw enough of them and didn't have access to them except on the job.
Yeah.
But that may not be, you may still see
now. Well, see, about jobs, all I want to see them. Social contact. There was a lot of opportunity for it with Joe, but I didn't want to. I tuned up his car, and that just opened up a lot of possibilities for doing things, you know, eat dinner with the family and all this, but they have something like 9 kids in the family, and I just knew that if, I was afraid he and his father and I would get into it. His father is a staunch conservative, and, has a law degree, and a very, very interesting man. But I kind of shied away from it. It just seemed like too much there to handle.
He's Cuban.
Joe, no.
No, that's Fred.
Fred. I just felt like it would be much too involving. There's a lot of opportunities here. His mother sells
anyway. Well, he's still not quite got into it, has he?
Well, see, I really don't want to get into it down there. That's the thing.
Well, you see, I live this. I have it day and night.
Yeah.
Now, I can't go and visit him too long at a time now because it's too rich for me.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't stay all day, it'd kill me, you see, because it's, I just pop open just like a watermelon. It's just too rich.
And you see so much of them, too, where you work.
Yeah, and like I say,
I'm
watching the grocery business from another end through my dad, and it's just beating him to death. And it makes me bitter.
Mm-hmm.
And I want out of the business. I don't want to stay in it. I'm here to make some money to get out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see.
Well, how much you got?
About $1,000 right now.
You mean you paid off the house and got us out?
Yeah.
God almighty, please.
It's all it away.
Yeah, you hadn't been working very long.
Well, I had.
You didn't start until the fall.
I had made a little bit during the summer, too.
Yeah, well, that's right.
But, I'm always fighting it. I don't want to get that involved in it. My mother will just say things to me now and then like, you know, it's just too bad you don't want to go in the grocery business. Because I know most of the people that are on top. I've just met them, you know, I just grew up knowing them. And I grew up in the business. And the opportunities are there for me to just go zoom right into it.
Do you knock around with them, Rob?
No, I stay away from
them. He's austere, isn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Sort of uncommunicated.
I've been accused of that a lot. It's like the division manager, the guy that runs the whole of Winn-Dixie in Miami. I used to go over and swim in a swimming pool and have lunch with his daughters. And he's like, my mom and my sister and I would go over there. This is when I was about 11 or 12, I guess. So I don't know how to just tell somebody that. Well, yeah, I used to go and swim in the division manager's pool and eat hot dogs over there. You know, and they're like, Walmart's coming. Everybody get the store straight. And I go, big deal. He's coming.
Well, I tell you, Rick, I used to do the same thing. And but the way it turned out is my friend there wouldn't hire me. I ain't go swimming in that pool, but they wouldn't hire me. Yeah, I had a long time before I could get used to that. I could see that point. I couldn't then. I wouldn't hire them either. Well, I thought your daddy had an easy street.
No, I think he's working harder now than he's ever worked in his life. He's worked 7 days a week, easy. And any time, day or night, if they have trouble, he has to go in. I've seen him go at 2 or 3 in the morning. And he's in his middle 50s now, and he's just going much too hard. And, you know, it just frightens me. And as